Hi, this is Jeff Seymour, and welcome to the podcast. Today I'm going to answer some listeners' questions. I'm going to discuss some acting theory, and then I'm going to lay out the real-life actor challenge. That's right, you heard me. Now I'll explain. If there's anything you wonder about, you know, if you have any questions about anything, maybe a situation, maybe something happened during, a time on set or during an audition, or you heard or you witnessed, or a director did this or did that, it would be nice to hear from you. And I'm sure a lot of you people have situations. Maybe it's about a show you wanted to pitch, or some interaction, or something a studio told you, or anything, you know. I mean, having been in the business for the 38 years and having, had my TV series and had my own theater and different things, you know, I could probably certainly share some ideas that would hopefully be constructive for you, things I've learned in my travels. So I'd be happy to do it. So look, I'm going to start off with a question now. David from Calgary is asking me, he's asking me a question about classical text. And he's a theater actor that works a lot in, Shakespeare and Shaw. And he wanted to know if there's any additional work, being that I'm using this real life actor method. I mean, what do you do about that? And, do I believe there is a right way to make the text come alive, this kind of thing? Well, that's a fair question. And I have a little bit to say about it. We're always going to be best served if we primarily focus on our story and what we're trying to get across. That should be the primary focus always. Secondary focus could be the way in which you're doing it. But if you put the way in which you're doing it in front of the actual information, the story, for me, it doesn't work. Most classical theater that I see, that seems to be the issue. And so, because I am not trained, I had some training in Shakespeare, but there's a lot of that language I don't understand. The colloquialisms used back then are not, it wasn't a big thing for me to study. I wasn't attracted to it. I mean, I love its concept and, anything anyone would love about Shakespeare, but I don't sit through a lot of Shakespeare plays. That's just how it is. Because as I've always said to people in class, when I didn't understand what they were doing in a given scene, and not a Shakespeare scene, a modern scene, I'd say, hey, guys, that's Shakespeare to me. That was a catchphrase I used to have, and it meant that, you're talking and it sounds correct, but I don't really understand what you're saying to each other. No slight to Shakespeare or Shakespearean actors. I'm talking about the ones that weren't doing it well, which is generally for me most of the time, in the sense that I don't think they're telling their story as well. I wondered for years whether or not it could actually be done, and perhaps it was my fault that I hadn't seen more Shakespeare. I would have come to this answer, I'm sure, more quickly. But I remember as a kid watching on PBS. It was the public broadcasting system. And it had a showing of Othello, played by Anthony Hopkins, and Iago was played by the late, great Bob Hoskins. And I remember listening to him do it, and I could actually understand what he was talking about. Both of them, but certainly Anthony Hopkins. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh, so I can understand this. Then I realized what was happening was the colloquialisms that were used, the words that I wasn't familiar with, It suddenly didn't seem to have as much bearing because I thought to myself, wow, you know what that's like? That's kind of like when I'm listening to a person speaking in broken English. They are either don't know some of the words or they're having to resort to their language for those words. And then in and around those words, I understand all the other words that they're using. So they're speaking to me in a broken English. Have you ever noticed how it's really not hard to understand those people that are stuck communicating that way with you? They're so full of what they're saying that you can put together and know what those words must mean, or they're inconsequential because you know what? I got it. That to me, that kind of theory, that kind of concept right there, to me is what makes it all work. It is a clarity of what you're speaking of. Now, I think what happens is, and I think the same thing affects people when they're using accents, it's easy to get distracted by the way that it's supposed to sound musically in our head. That's why accents tend to, you know, be problematic from time to time, is because, you know, it's hard enough to make your acting as spontaneous as you can. You know, you just, in a best case scenario, I think the actor starts speaking and these words just come out, you know, not only in the right order, of course, but it's just right. Because in life, like I'm doing right now, I'm just flying along, and my inflection is, it's good enough for me. I think I'll keep this. So this is like effortless to me. And in the real life actor concepts, the idea, how do we get to a point where when we are true blue talking about the thing we're talking about? I mean, that's really what we're here to do, to convey an idea, an emotion, you know, I need you to understand whatever that is, that thing. When I make that my primary goal, that truly, 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 and I'm not faking it, I'm not pretending to, but actually everything's kind of worked out. I know exactly what I'm doing, and yeah, I'm more invested in the shape of the thing than I am the content. No, I'm talking about the real deal. I'm invested in the content, not the shape. Mostly, of course. Then we are not as distracted by the sound, but when we're kind of hamstrung a bit with having to, you know, change a speech pattern or throw in an accent, it's really easy for the thing to get a little mechanical because you feel almost subconsciously bound to the musicality of what you've discovered. You do your Irish accent and finally one time you go, that's it. And it's hard not to want to just mimic that when you go in to do your acting. To me, I think that's the trick of the accent, unless it is completely comfortable for you. When it's comfortable for you, then in essence, you could improvise with it. And so, for those of you that use accents, I think the trick is to be able to have an impromptu conversation with someone and be able to carry your accent all the way through it. And when you get to the point that you can really lay that accent in and ideally be actually chatting with people at a cocktail party and use it and no one says, are you an actor? Is that a fake accent? When you get to that point that you can do that, where you could actually kind of improvise with that, then I think you've mastered it. And so let's get back to the Shakespeare classical idea. Always content. I also recently, remember now, I saw Mark Rylance on Facebook. Someone posted he was doing some Shakespeare. And I remember the ease and simplicity of listening to him speak and thinking, again, there, you see, I can follow this. I know exactly what's happening here. And it's not because of his intonation. It was that he seemed to actually be a human being speaking. And what he was saying, the content, was the number one thing he was getting across, his idea. Not the way he was shaping his idea, but truly his idea. I mean, that's it. You see, when the person's authentic and they're full of what they're saying, it's not just your words. You know, we send out almost images as we're speaking to people. Our entire body, everything is so synced up when we're telling a story. I swear to you, you could watch someone through a window and maybe not even hear the dialogue, and you would have a good idea of what they were talking about. And that's the whole theory here, is that, you know, the closer we get to being able to communicate in the same full manner, the same direct kind of committed manner that we do in life, the more full and authentic our performances will be. And I give you many examples. The other one I like to use is if you just come upon a room and open a door and inside, you know, two people say two words before they realize you're standing there. Just an utterance. You close that door, you walk off, someone says, what was going on in there? You'd be able to say, well, you know, I think it was a couple and I think the guy was, I don't know, flirting with like an ex-girlfriend. And, you know, we are able to extrapolate from that short burst so much, and we're generally correct. And I know if you're listening to me, you know what I'm talking about. How is that possible? That's possible because when we are really in that sweet groove in life and we're communicating, it's just, we exude so much information, you know, and it's not like we're trying to exude it everywhere. It just is. When a person is fully committed to an idea, and that idea and getting that thing out takes precedence over the shape, the accent, the intonation, the, you know, plan, gesticulation, you know, when you're not doing it that way, boy, your instrument, it resonates in the room with such a hum, man. I just get it like on all cylinders. All right, I hope I've answered your question. So thank you for that question, David in Calgary. Next one. All right. Wow, we have two Davids in a row. David is asking me about comedy. Script analysis, plosive words, funny-sounding words, callbacks. Yes, I've certainly dabbled. In fact, most people that would know me would think, yeah, Jeff's kind of one of them wannabe funny people. And they would be right. So I certainly have a lot I could say about comedy. Right off the bat, let me say this. To me, comedy is like, it's kind of like... maybe like dancing or like singing. Comedy, generally, people either have a funny bone or they don't. And so I think that while you could teach someone who doesn't really have any kind of rhythm in their body to dance, or even if they had a little bit of rhythm or even some rhythm to dance, I don't think they're ever going to rise to the level of someone who is just kind of a born dancer. I think people have funny bones, you know? I think most people can actually be much funnier than they are. I find most people to be kind of delightful with humor and their ability to laugh. But I do know when it comes to getting out in front of an audience and having that kind of magic timing and idea of what funny is, that's really where it comes to bear. And I find that like any person who grew up just being able to sing and carry a note and have, you know, perfect pitch, and people that just know how to shake their groove thing, that's just how it's always been. I think that it's the same thing for comedy. So I think to a degree, you could perhaps, get somebody through a comedy play show, and, you know, if they just kind of follow the painted steps on the floor, they could probably do a pretty good job and carry on with the right little funny noises and cuts, and it would work. But if we're talking about true comedy, I want to say right off the bat that I think it's one of those things. And so just like a person doesn't get too upset if they can't quite make the Carnegie on their singing skills because they realize, you know, maybe this isn't supposed to be for me, because that's a different thing that gets you there, or to be a sought-after dancer for whatever venue. I think the same is true for comedy. Yeah. But let me tell you what I do know about, you know, just some basic things about comedy. For instance, actually, we were working on a show the other night, a scene in class, and it was what you would probably call a dark comedy, you know. It's not like a set-up laugh comedy. It's not like a traditional, you know, Neil Simon with the great punchlines in there, or anything, any three-camera show that's well-written, where it's kind of set up to be set up, you know. We set up jokes, we capitalize on them, we know they're coming, they do them, they deliver, that kind of thing. This is more of a dark comedy, and the observation I made was, you know, it's a funny thing, because I know from having also directed comedies of this type in plays, that it's a funny thing that separates an uproarious night from a kind of quiet night. And this tends to happen more when the text doesn't sound like jokes. And I've noticed that to be the case with audiences. They will laugh sometimes if the thing is set up to sound like a joke. And I know this because there were lines when I've worked on new plays, and I thought, you know, this line just sounds like a joke. I don't know what the joke is, but it kind of sounds like one. And I know that if I had it delivered that way, we would get a laugh, because I realized, you know, the audience a lot of times will just kind of laugh to what they think, you know, what they imagine it's supposed to be. And then maybe we'll lean over and go, what did that mean? After they've already laughed. So I do know there is sometime shape that'll make people laugh, the way things are done, the timing. But in a something that's written where it's not punchline-y, the difference between it being a drama on one night and a comedy on the other is, man, it's slippery sometimes. So through time, I had different things I realized. One was that one of the keys, I think, is you have to remember you're in a comedy. Now, what I mean by that is not, so remember you're in a comedy and then say your lines in a comedic way. No, there's just a presence of mind that I think is needed. Some of you will know exactly what I'm talking about who have encountered this, but the difference between that drama and the comedy that I noticed was the attitude of the actors, even though everything kind of sounded the same, there was something missing. I don't want to say a lightness, because I don't think we play that. I think that you just know you're in a comedy. It seems, you know, like no one's actually going to die. You know, it's there's an awareness that we're just not in a drama. Sometimes what I'd say is, guys, remember, keep a smile in your forehead. Just up in your head. There's a smile inside there. It doesn't reflect on your face, but you have to have that awareness. That, and you never know where funny is with dark comedies. I know that when I had the actors working, I actually turned the heat up. Even though one was lying, I said, go on the offensive. You know, give the other person a hard time for even questioning you. You know, be indignant about it, because actually that's what I notice in life. That's how we get people off our trail. We start, you know, how dare you to even ask that? And we get very upset about it because, you know, we got to get the hell out of that room. We're in trouble. Anyway, when they did it that way, which even seemed in a way, way more ferocious and irritated and excited, it became, you know, hysterical. And so you've got to find where comedy is with the dark comedies. And, you know, don't be beholden to any initial idea. Now, comedy is it's a funny thing, but it is. And I have found that where comedy lies sometimes will surprise you. Many of you who have been in previews, having worked on a comedy, you'll go into previews, and which is so needed with a comedy, And then, you know, suddenly people will be laughing in places you'll have either forgotten was funny because you've been on the thing for so long, or suddenly it'll be clear to you why it's funny and you would have never been able to see it if you hadn't had the audience there to laugh at it at that moment. And then you just kind of freeze frame what just happened. You think, ah, of course that's funny. So you never know where funny is. And be willing to experiment all around. But for me, it's always in the realm of authenticity. But just to keep that smile in your forehead and remember you're in a comedy. But otherwise, plosive words, man, I don't know. You know, I don't, to me, I think we can make anything funny. And I do know that there are, certainly you referred to callbacks. Well, absolutely. But that's just the structure of comedy. I think it's been around since cavemen. I think that back then when they were, you know, going over the Mastodon hunt, you know, one of them would remember, and that's what, you know, the Mastodon said, you know, for the third time, and everybody would laugh. But aside from that, that's what I think about it. I mean, you know, funny people can sometimes make anything funny. And then brilliantly written stuff with great setup lines and great punchlines, you know, well written. Boy, you know, just clearly stated, clearly said for an audience can generate lots of laughter. So those are the two extremes. I do think there is such a thing as certainly funny writing, funny structure. But again, I don't think there's a recipe for that. I think that... you know, if you're a funny person, you get to that kind of writing and styling by really getting to your authentic self. That's when you're going to be the most funny. I'm sure many of you feel this way. I know I do. In real life, if I want to make a gag or make some people laugh, I seem to be able to do it on demand. It's like no problem. But I know I have chased a joke in text. I have tried to find that laugh night after night. And I think to myself, you know, in real life, I got no problems at the barbecue. I can make anything funny, it seems. I think we can all do that. We know the timing. It's just like, right, well, of course. It's now, it's not then. But when you get on stage, you know, it's a funny thing. There you go again. I'm sorry with all these stupid puns. Anyway, that's my answer there, David. Thanks for the question. Next question is from Gerard in Mexico. And Gerard is asking, you know, how can an actor in Mexico get their information, picture, whatever, up to casting directors in the United States? Well, Gerard, I'm not a specialist here, but I do know just from my basic knowledge that, you know, there are sites where actors post their pictures and have their information, and they put their, you know, a demo reel of their work, and then it's accessible and it's put under categories. And so certainly people can easily online access your material. So that's one thing. If you're saying, how do you get your... the attention of, say, a specific casting director, let's say, for a specific project. Well, you know, all this stuff becomes very tricky, Gerard, because even if you're a Canadian and you want to work in the United States or vice versa, you know, the first people they go to, their first concern always are the people locally around them, because that's just no muss, no fuss. It's right there. They can just... there, yeah, can we walk in? You can walk to work. The reason they go out of that circle is for either something they can't find in that smaller circle just because of the casting type, or talent and type. It's, okay, I have to pay extra. Will I benefit? Will I be in the positive side of the deal if I bring this person in? That is a basic concept. And now with that equation, anyone in the world can crunch these numbers, because that's really all it boils down to. It's a budget. It's a movie with a budget. And if they put someone in the movie, then they're hoping it'll enhance the product. By enhancing the product, you might be able to enhance your chance of success. You'll make more money on the product, so you will benefit and, you know, win. That's really it. That's all it is. And so if I think if I bring someone in from, you know, Antarctica, and that they will absolutely be able to make this thing what I think it needs to be. And then again, this is all subjective. We're all just trying to figure it out. I mean, there's no, you never know what's going to happen, but we're all using our best judgment. And then we just weigh, well, how much will it cost to fly that person in, put them up against what we could possibly get? How does that scale work out? So understand, Gerard, that if you are trying to entice someone from Mexico, from your place in Mexico, you're trying to entice someone in the United States. Well, naturally, what you're saying is you can offer them a skill or your look. I have no idea what you look like or what your skill level is that will outweigh what it's going to take for you to be able to work there, which, of course, I'm assuming will involve a work visa. And they'll have to. Now, do people do this kind of thing? Oh, yes, of course, all the time. All the time. You know, when if a company wants you bad enough, they will make it work. They're in the business of doing that. If it's possible on the planet, they will make it work. But that only happens, and they only go that distance when they think that they're going to benefit a little more than what they put in. Ideally, a whole bunch more. So, my friend, if there's something special about you, and I'm assuming there is, then you would have to market that special skill, that special thing, whether it's your look, your incredible resume, or maybe a tape of you acting, and you're it, man. Well, if people see that, then there's a chance they will go through the extra energy to get you to that next place. But you have to be able to show them something, because if all you've got is, you know, hey, I'm really talented and I'm going to help you guys out because I know what I'm doing, and let's assume that's true, they got no reason to believe you, because unfortunately there's a lot of liars out there that say the same thing and, you know, they don't really have the skills. So again, there's no reason for them to gamble. So, having no idea, you know, what your resume looks like or what your skill set is, I would say that, first of all, you got to make sure you have stuff on tape that is mind-blowing. You have to have something that shows that you really have a high skill level. That's the only way you're going to even begin to negotiate having somebody bring you to the States for something. And I don't mean to say this, you know, like in a negative way. Hey, man, if you got the skill set and you get it to the right person, this stuff happens. It's happening right now somewhere in the world. You know, it happens. It can happen for you. But that's really how you have to look at it. If you're able to get their attention, you have to be able to put something in their hand that they can look at that's going to blow their mind, because they need their mind blown to get you from there to here. I'm sure you can understand that. And I wish I could give you more of an ABC answer, you know, like do this, then do that, then do this. But at the end of the day, the only way that you're going to get hired from that far away is if you've got an amazing skill set or look or combination, or there's just got to be something. That's it. I'm sure you can understand that. It's really just a business like that. Nobody cares about anything else. What are you going to offer me? Am I sure I'm going to get it? How much is it going to cost me? And what will it do to my product? That's it. All right, man. Thanks for the question. All right, this next question is from John, and John is asking me, he's kind of a new listener, so he admits he's listened to about five of them, and he says, you know, maybe the answer to this question is in the others, but here it is. And listen, I can't say this one enough, and apparently I haven't, so I'm happy to answer it. He's basically asking me about how well you need to know your lines. In other words, do you say them verbatim? Because if what I am, telling people is this in this real life actor approach, you know, you're trying to be as authentic as possible and, you know, keep it real and all this stuff, that he's kind of assuming that perhaps what I'm saying then is to do that, to get as real as you can. You know, you improvise a little, or you can if you need to or want to. And then it kind of, in his one of his last lines, he says, is this a safe assumption that you're saying to always portray a scene as ad-libbed to make it as real as possible? Now, that can mean a couple of things. It could mean what he's asking me is like it should feel ad-libbed to make it as real as possible. Or he's maybe, John, maybe you're saying is it all right to ad-lib a bit? So let me just answer all of that. No. You have to do your lines verbatim. You have to learn your lines verbatim. It's not as tricky if you just get to say whatever you want. And I'm a firm believer in that, because I notice that the actors will add ums and ands, and they'll do these little things where they're trying to make it a little more familiar to themselves. You know, they're trying to just kind of round off the corners a bit by being able to throw in these little isms that they might have in their own speech pattern. Or for sometimes I notice it's their go-to ism, they'll add it in there, you know. And that helps kind of smooth out this feeling they have that they're reciting someone else's lines. So they kind of shoehorn it by, you know, adding these little words, utterances. No, man, no cheating. None. It has to be verbatim. Come on. Some writer labored, you know. You know, when writers write something, they just don't take a bunch of words and throw it in the air and then, you know, pick the ones that landed face up. They're weighing that stuff out on a gram scale. They're trying to get it down. They're working it. And then an actor just comes in and says whatever they want, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. I guarantee you that's not the same way the writer was writing it. There was a lot of care taken. Now, are there bad scripts? Oh, God, yes. There's a zillion being written as I'm speaking. But it's not for you to decide what the bad script or the good script is, because I've noticed in actors, many times they have no idea. I've also noticed that great actors can make a lousy script brilliant. Sit there and watch a great actor in a great moment, and then really sometimes just separate out the words and see them on a page and think, boy, that is just the most mundane, badly written line. That's a cliche line right there. I've heard that one in most every movie. But this person does it, and if you didn't pay rapt attention to the words as they were coming out and decipher this, you wouldn't even realize that, because that whole thing just worked. Actors that are too concerned about that stuff are putting way too much on each of these words, and they shouldn't be, because in real life, you know, man, we communicate all sorts of things, and it's not even in the words we're saying. And it's evident to anyone watching. We talk about this and we mean that. We mean that, we talk about this. I mean, we do this all the time. So you can't worry about that. That can't be the magic, you know, whether or not you're able to kind of, you know, push the words around a little bit. No, absolutely not. Besides that, I think you need to be trained to do them verbatim, because folks, when you're on sets, man, sometimes they want them verbatim. And I mean in a crazy way. I mean like to the letter. And there is nothing as disturbing as being on a set where you're guesting and then, you know, have that script supervisor walk over and point out, no, you said this instead of that. You said you're adding two, you know, but here. It's only one but. And, you know, they're telling you this and, you know, you're being cool and listening. Then you're trying to remember those four things. And then now we got to go back. Please don't put the book down right then. And here we go again. Tick tock. We're coming to lunch. You know, you need to be ridiculously skilled at getting your lines just right. Just do yourself a favor, man. Because it's far easier when they come to you and the director says, you know what, I don't like these lines at all. So why don't you just go ahead? What do you feel like saying? Well, the actor who's very good with verbatim can make that transition easily. Are you kidding? Why? Well, because you talk all day long and make stuff up. Clearly you're good at it. The actor that doesn't learn verbatim and then is asked to be verbatim under the hot lights and the pressure, TikTok and lunch coming up, they tend to spiral right into the ground with this stuff, or they manage to get through it. But the, you know, creatives are looking at it like, I wish we could have gotten the lines. But we press on. So, John, my answer would be no, verbatim. You want to be that person, man. You want to be the person that walks into the audition, even with a poorly written project, and you are able to give their poorly written words such beautiful loft that if the writer's in the room, who's ever watching, goes, there you go, that's how it's done, as if, you know, it was just the fact that you said the words. No, it's your skill. So when an actor comes to me for coaching and says, hey, you know, this is crazy, I don't know how, and I say, look, first of all, let's accept the fact all the actors have the same script they're going to try and make work. You're going to be the one that's going to make it sing. And you're going to do that by, first of all, just accepting the fact these are the words. Now, let's really get behind these words. What's really happening here? Let's not worry about the words. Because as I mentioned earlier about the person speaking in broken English, when we exude what's going on, words, schmerds, it doesn't matter. We're so clear that it just, every bit of it sings. And if you become the person who starts to worry about stuff they can't change, you're always going to look like something's got you hamstrung. It's never going to fly, man, because you've let something you can't change take you down. I think we have to assume the words are supposed to be the way they're supposed to be. But having said that, you know, I have to tell you, I was coaching a friend of mine, and they had a line. She was playing a doctor, and she takes a patient's pulse. And the line written was, he's pulseless. I said, you know, in the history of the world, I've never heard a doctor say that. Now, maybe there are doctors listening right now. They're going, no, that's what we say all the time. We say stat and pulseless. It was screwing. I think it's even hard to say. I said, look, I'm going to just make a line call here. Just say no pulse. He's got no pulse. There is no pulse. Don't say pulseless. It's creeping me out, and it's making you feel weird. You know, I think there are times where we change that. I'm going to say it once in a while. There is something so weird. You know, listen, writers aren't God. They're not necessarily perfect. You might get to the set, and the director will say, no, we're not saying pulseless. Just say he's got no pulse. I don't know who writes this stuff. You know, who knows? Those are the answers to four questions, and please, I'd like to encourage any of you, anything, any story that happened, anything, please. It's fun to be able to look at these things and then have these discussions, and if you enjoy it, you know, to get us off on all sorts of ideas and topics. You know, I'm obviously... You know, with the Real Life Actor Method, I've got this word I'm trying to get out, and you know, the reason why I keep saying it's so different is that we just don't discuss acting at all. You know, this is the idea that I just think is so dumb. Because see, I think you make a mistake. Once you start talking about acting, you're kind of infecting the authenticity of what's happening. Now, there's plenty to talk about. I'm just saying let's not use acting terms. I'm saying let's not use any acting, you know, beats, restrictions to, you know, opposites and things that really aren't the way people think or behave. Do people play opposites? Oh, absolutely. Of course, all the time. Yeah. Yeah, you know, you've broken my heart, and I'm going to pretend like I'm as happy as anything. And the reason why is because I don't want you to think for one second, because you anticipate you broke my heart. And now I'm seeing you here, and I want you to know that my life is great because I don't want you to get that. I don't want you to have that. So absolutely I'm playing an opposite. I suppose my heart's broken, but I'm going to act joyous because... But you see, I have real reasons why. I use real, authentic, human being reasons, and I don't, like, talk about it as if we're working in a lab somewhere and breaking stuff down in our lab coats with little gloves on. That's not how I like to work. I think we can still have the effect we're looking for, but we change the dialogue. And you see, my theory is that if we change the dialogue, then we're not constantly reminding ourselves this is all bullshit and we are just puppeteers. Yeah, I see most actors as kind of like these radio control pilots. The people that sit there with the joystick, hey, it's a great sport. It's a lot of fun. I've done it. But... they're like there with their joystick. Everything's planned out, but they're not really flying the plane or the boat or the little helicopter or the car. They're just off with a joystick, and it, you know, and they're just kind of, and it's thrilling in a different way, but it's not like if you're actually in the plane or the boat or the helicopter or the car. And, you know, it seems real. I mean, when the plane flies by, I mean, that pilot, you know, it looks, the whole thing looks pretty real. The pilot looks a little stiff in there. He looks, you know, to be honest, he looks like he's made out of wood. My way of working is about, let's quit pretending like we're manipulating stuff and planning, and we got a little joystick and we're going to kind of puppeteer ourselves and radio control it. My idea is, no, let's actually really just kind of imagine ourselves actually flying the plane, the boat, the car, or the helicopter. Let's do everything in the first person. Let's talk about it like we're in the first person. Look, I know at the end of the day, it's all make-believe, but let's cut out as much make-believe as possible. Look, here's an idea. I want you to imagine one room, and you're in it. And then there's another room that you're going to need to pass through to get to the third room, and the third room is where your performance is. First room is where you start. It's in the second room, in between these two rooms, where you do all of your study, where you learn all your lines, where you figure out everything you need to do to be able to go into the third room and give this stunning performance. This stunning, authentic performance. So, my belief is that when you go through that second room, the less you talk about acting and touch it and fondle it and caress it and break it down and break it up and play with it like it's clay, the less you deal with acting, the less likely it is to be all over you by the time you get out of that room into the next room. The less chance it has to stick to you. Because honestly, if you just walk through that center room like a ninja, it's still going to stick to your feet a little bit. It's still going to end up getting on you a little bit. The only thing is, if you do it the second way, they're going to need CSI to figure that out. The first way, it's going to be all over. Anyone in the audience can be able to see it, because trying to do all of your homework and not have acting stick to you to where we can see it is a trick. It's really hard to do. So here's a really simple idea, folks. How about we just don't talk about acting? Why doesn't that make sense to everyone in the world? I don't get it. What's so hard to understand about that? I explained to you how you could do an opposite. We're still doing opposites. And you know what? If I need to like break a beat up or whatever it is these people love to do with their beats, I could do that because we're orchestrating the thing. I'll say, hey, just pause right there before you close the computer and look up at her. I guess we have a different beat now. But we don't have to put these manipulated, pre-thought, bullshit acting lingo lines in our actors' heads. Why? Why? Another thing to forget. We got plenty to forget. Like a whole damn crew staring at me right now, man. I got lots of things I'm not supposed to think about. So let's put as few things in that little not think about bag as possible. It's got just a couple of things. It'd be a lot easier not to think about those things than a whole, you know, popcorn bag full of shit I need to forget now. Why? That doesn't make sense? You don't think you can be powerful? You think that my actor playing the opposite as I explain it to them about why they're acting the way they are isn't going to be as powerful or adept as your actor when they're, you know, actually mapped it out with pen and paper? I'll keep saying it. The way acting is broken down was made up by people that just made it up. So all the beats and choices and all of this lingo, man, that people use, it's just made up. It's not law. It's not like the compound breakdown of it, which you can't get away from because them there are the particles. It's just an idea. That's it. It's not in a Bible. It's just an idea, and it's ideas. I have a different one. You know, look, here's what I know. I know that what I'm talking about will absolutely change the way you act. It's going to completely change it. If we've never worked together, I say that because that initial improvement curve goes dramatically when we first meet, because to take you from all of this stuff that you're dealing with and get you into a way of working which is freeing and confidence building, and it's just such a different way of working. Now listen to me say this stuff. You know, it's actually taken me a lot to get this brazen about it, but what makes me go forward with it is that, well, I'm willing to throw down and prove it. I mean, that's what the podcasts are, right? I mean, who are the other acting coaches doing podcasts? I forget, because I haven't been able to find any yet. Maybe there's one out there. But, you know, I'll be brazen because I'm willing to put up every week, twice a week, talk about acting. You know why most acting coaches can't talk about acting? What would they talk about? Because since everyone's concepts are based on these old ones, they're just going to go over a bunch of old stuff. It's not really going to be about any kind of life theory or, you know, ideas about how these things actually work and be able to lay them out in cogent terms. It's going to be either anecdotal, where they'll tell you about, you know, people they trained and what happened that day, or it'll be just a repetition of something about, you know, you got to be on your breath. Or they'll just say stuff that, you know, kind of sounds like it makes sense, but it doesn't. Now, I don't mean to bash these people, only a little bit, and only where I feel they're wasting people's time and money and confusing them and putting them in their own heads. Because I think these ideas have gotten to a point where they're so twisted now and upside down and inside out, and actors in their heads with, and I'm saying this to benefit actors. I'm doing this to, I mean, look at all the stuff, first of all, that, you know, I'm not monetizing. So it's not like, you know, yes, listen to this and then I'll sell you that. You know, that's not what's going on here. So I'm going to say, and I'm willing to be challenged by anyone, but I tell you what I am willing to do. Because my idea is in 2 years, I want to open a 2-year conservatory. So in the next 2 years, you know, I've got to go out and Johnny Appleseed this stuff, because there is such a resistance to new idea in this business about how acting can be taught, how much more effectively, that I've not only written the book and now do the podcasts and have the website and travel around, but I'm willing to travel around more. I'm making a real-life actor challenge right now. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to say. You see, I think that if... anyone who trains with me in one of my, whatever it's a 2-day intensive over a weekend, or, you know, 4 class sessions during 1 week where I travel into a town and do that, I am so positive that if people try that, that they will, it's going to change you. Now, I know all this is brazen, but I'll remind you of this. A person could say, hey, I'm the fastest man on earth. And they're only bragging or lying if they're not. If they are, they were just making a statement of fact. Well, I'm saying I know this will have that kind of an effect on your acting. So you have to ask yourself, are you an actor that actually does want to improve dramatically to the point that you feel like you've got a new way you're actually hitting the ball and the ball is going another, you know, 80 yards? That this is actually going to enhance your ability, actually going to do it, to go into a room, to audition, to book jobs, to get on better, to have a clearer head, more confidence, you know, all of these almost magical superpowers that any actor would want to have. That if you work on it with me, if I come to you and we do this, it's going to have such a dramatic effect that it's, well, it's going to blow your mind a little bit. And I'm so positive of that, you see. I'm so positive because, well, 37 years I've been doing it, you know, I would know what the effect is of it by now, you would think, that I'm willing to say that if we do this thing and that doesn't happen, well, the event costs you nothing. Nothing. And you don't have to explain yourself to me, by the way. You don't have to just face me and tell me why. No, there's no discomfort here, man. No, you just, when it's over, you just send me an email says wasn't for me. Have a friend send it. Say just nah, N-A-H. And it won't cost you anything. Why would I do that? Well, I know there's a ton of apathy out there because I know there are a lot of people that say, hey, I can do this and I can do that. And then they don't deliver. Or, you know, you kind of get through the weekend. Someone says, how was it? You go, yeah, it was all right. You know, I mean, I think I learned something. There was this thing. And you justify it. And it's like, it didn't suck. No, I'm saying it's going to blow your mind. And how will I judge that? Well, I don't know. It's your opinion. So I guess you can decide what is mind-blowing and what isn't. And you can base that on whether or not it costs you anything to study with me for that time we have together or not. Now, is this brazen? Is this braggadocious? Not if I deliver. Not if I deliver. So I'm willing to say, you, people who are listening, do you actually want to improve dramatically in a very short amount of time? Is that something that would make you happy? To feel just completely different? Well, to the point that it would blow your mind. If this is something you want to do, actually want to do, then I have to ask you, well, why wouldn't you put something like this together? What does that mean? You get some friends together. You get a group in your town, wherever you are. If I can make it happen, I mean, if I can get there, I'm not going to, you know, walk through a jungle to get to it. But I mean, if I can, you know, if it's a town somewhere I can fly into, that's what's on my schedule now. Because I know I have to do this because I'm trying to change the course of a river. I know that. But I am someone willing to throw down like that because, you know, if I show up and it doesn't work out and everyone feels like, hey, mine not blown, prof, then it's all on me, isn't it? There's no strings here. There's no double talk. There's no small print. This is what I'm saying. So the person that's on these podcasts that I guess you're listening to who wrote that book, he is saying, I will show up in your township, in your hamlet, in your city. You get a group of people together, kind of like a Tupperware party. I'm the Tupperware. So I'm willing to throw down. That's it. So are there people listening to this that actually would like those kind of that kind of thing? Because I can tell you what, if there was someone who said that and I heard it, and they said, oh, Jeff, you come to me, you study with me for a weekend, and like I could check them out a little bit. I mean, if they had a podcast, I've been listening. I'm kind of thinking, yeah, these theories aren't bad. They had a book. I read it. I said, yeah, this all makes sense. And that same person said, you come here and it doesn't work, then it's not going to cost you anything. But I'm telling you, it's going to blow your mind. Oh, I'd go. Why? Well, because I want to succeed, man. As an artist, of course. Why would I not do that? So what you're really then gambling is my time, just my raw time, worth the upside of this, magical, mind-blowing event that's going to occur that's really going to tickle my fancy. Now, is it worth it? Is my time? Well, I can't answer that. It would be worth my time. Because what would be theoretically at the end of that rainbow, man, I want that shit. I want it. I want a lot of it. I want tons of it as an artist. If you can make me hit the ball harder and run faster and stuff, then definitely. You're guaranteeing that to the point that I'm going to go, geez. Not just, it was all right. No, I mean, it's like, wow. Wow. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. It sounds braggadocious. I know. I'm so sorry. But like I said, I'm willing to show up. I'll meet you at the track. So, if you want to get together a little Tupperware party of people, you can contact me. I'll tell you, depending on where you are, how many people it needs to be. And, we'll set it up, and I'll show up, and then you'll see what you'll see. I'm willing to throw down, man. Do I have any takers out there, or are you just a bunch of fakers? Which is it? I'm temporarily confused. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Real Life Actor Podcast. This is Jeff Seymour. Please subscribe. Let us know you're listening on social media and feel free to email us at jeff@reallifeactor.com with any questions you'd like me to answer on the air. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.